Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, October 17th. I'm Ray Graff. Gordon Fricke has pulled into the studio, and he'll be parked here for the next hour to answer all of your automotive repair questions. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your questions now at 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. If you have a little issue going on with your car or your truck, maybe you hear a ping or a rattle or something is not quite right, this is the time. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And we will be with Gordon Fricke for the next hour. Your car calls coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions, Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years, beginning at Factory Mechanics Training School in Germany. Before starting his own business, he worked at the Annis Corporation, a Volkswagen, Porsche, and Audi dealership based in Massachusetts. If you have a question for Gordon Fricke, he doesn't just do German cars now. I want to make that clear. 800-348-2551. You got a Yugo? He could probably answer that as well. 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon Fricke, welcome back.
Thanks, Ray. Nice to be back.
You texted me a couple of great pictures today.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah, what's up with that?
I was on my motorcycle a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I guess, in Brattleboro, Vermont.
Yeah.
And I was in traffic at a light in right in town, and this 60 Cadillac.
Beautiful.
Two-door.
Yeah.
Pulling a vintage camper went through town. And I looked at this car. And you saw the picture. It's in patina. It's like a barn find car. It's not restored. It's not shiny. It's a 60 Cadillac.
Right. Is it Coupe de Ville?
Whatever the two-door was called. Yes, would it be a Coupe de Ville at that point, right?
Yep.
Or maybe it was a number car. But in any case, so I snuck through traffic, got to the next light, poked my head in the window, and a couple young guy and a girl were in there, and I said, I really love this car. Any way I can get a picture of it. He said, well, if we can get through traffic, I'll try to pull over. So we go through town. He pulls over, and this car and camper are like 50 feet long.
Yep.
So I got talking to the guy. Nice young guy. Lives, I think he said, in Kingston. And they do these cars as kind of a hobby. I think his dad's involved and maybe a brother.
Yeah.
And they dug the car up and just cleaned it, straightened it out, but the running gear is not 60 Cadillac.
Right.
It's a resto mod underneath the hood and chassis. So air suspension, the car goes up and down. Big modern fuel injected V8. I think it was a Cadillac derived engine, a 6-something liter.
That's a big engine.
Automatic, modern automatic overdrive transmission, the whole deal. But the car looks old and cool, but it runs and drives like a modern car.
And what about the interior? How did it look?
The interior looked pretty good, but it was not done.
Right.
But I think they're going to bring this car back and really finish it off so it looks 100%, shiny top to bottom.
Well, I understand from Jim Lavoulis, our producer, that we put a picture or two on our page.
Yes.
So if you go to our Vox Pop page for today's show, you will see this. It was pretty cool.
And I didn't get the guy's name, which I wish I had remembered that, but I told him, I said, I'm interested in old cars. I do a little radio show once in a while in Albany on a public station. He said, yeah, I've listened to it before. I'm from Kingston. He says, I know what you're talking about.
I'm a sucker for Cadillacs. So
that's why I sent you the pic.
Yeah, thank you very much. Another car I can't have. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Mark in Springfield. Mark, you're on.
Yes, hi, Gordon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 8-cylinder 2002 Chevy Suburban, a 1500. I bought it used, and it ran great for years. It still runs great. But I have an issue with the gauge cluster. It's analog gauge cluster, where whether it's idling or I'm driving, the needles will, on the gauge cluster, they'll peg and they'll jump back and forth. So the only thing I've attempted to do so far was replace the gauge cluster, and that didn't fix it. So I was wondering if you had any input.
Wow. So all of your gauges do the same thing? It's not just one, but
exactly.
they all peg?
And they go back to normal after that?
Yes. Yes, they do.
Having replaced the cluster, where did you get the cluster? Was it used or remanufactured unit, or where did you get it?
Well, it was used from a salvage yard in upstate New York, but it was apparently said to be good by the person I purchased it.
Yes. So here's the nagging question. If this is somewhat of a common problem of that vintage cluster, you might be unlucky enough to have two failing in the same way.
Oh.
If you had purchased a newer remanufactured unit, and it did it, I would be suspicious of something else, like a power or ground feed to the cluster, which I would still be suspicious of.
Yeah.
Right.
What you'll need to do is gain access to a wiring diagram that indicates what all the wires do that plug into that unit, and just be concerned with probably I'm sure there's a ground supply to that cluster. Because all those gauges and everything in there relies on a ground circuit to operate. And if anything can affect all of them together, it's the ground or the power supply. So you have to check those two.
That makes sense.
Yeah. You have to check both ground and power to the cluster. Aside from that, there's not a lot you can do because it is a integrated printed circuit with little modules and chips and stuff.
Are these
in there.
Analog meters?
They are needle gauges that swing, but they're electrically operated. They're not hooked up to cables or anything like that.
I've seen this now. You know, remember that Chrysler?
Yeah.
Was it 2003, 4, 5? I don't know, remember what it was now. The you worked on it. Piece of junk.
Oh, your caravan.
Town and Country.
Town and Country, yeah.
Occasionally, this would do that. The same thing.
Sweep them all.
Yeah, like early on, like when I was starting it up, not exactly on startup, and then it would go back. And I always thought this was either a surge or a ground issue and not a huge deal.
It's probably what's happening. And a lot of vehicles, when you start them, they do a sweep to do a test to make sure all the gauges are functioning.
Yeah.
I don't know if this vehicle normally does that at startup time.
It
does that sweep test. Yeah, that is a self check. So it's possible that something's kind of freaking it out, and it's either losing its current momentarily. The power comes back on. The cluster says, "Oh, we're on again. Do a sweep. Make sure all the gauges work."
Could it be a loose connector?
Yeah,
even?
Sure it could. I would be suspicious of the connector that goes to the unit. And your powers and grounds. That's probably as deep as you can go.
Okay.
Other than suspecting the unit. Yeah.
All right, Mark, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. We'll grab one or two more here before the first break. Gordon Fricke is our guest today on Vox Pop. Ted in Shelburne, Vermont. Ted, you're on.
Yes, thank you very much. I really enjoyed the old car story, and I wished I was sitting on a motorcycle too, but... I was a little boy when World War II was getting going. So I have an 09 Pontiac Vibe, the 2.4 with 5-speed automatic, and I ran it out of oil without really meaning to. And partly this is a warning tale. It turns out that there's the cooling system for the oil goes from the transmission across on top of like a cross member under the radiator. Steel tube, steel bracket, Vermont salt, rusted out, dropped the oil out, and I must say I drove it a little bit after I kind of knew, like I was on an upgrade, and it didn't really engage. It would sort of rev up like a teenager with a clutch or something and then engage. And I still drove it because I just wanted to go hike up Mount Philo 5 or 6 miles gently on a highway. Then I left it in the parking lot and took care of it. Added some oil. So anyhow, it's been run low, and I was lucky to get next day, but a local kind of a mechanic gas station fixed those tubes up, and he put in a universal oil. I know it's supposed to have a, is it TIV, something like that, a special Toyota oil, or very particular.
Yeah, you're talking transmission fluid, correct? Earlier you said ran it out of oil, but you're talking the transmission.
I'm sorry. Yes, transmission fluid.
Yeah, exactly. No, I did gather that, but I wanted to be sure we were same page.
I appreciate filling in the gaps for me. And he put in, as I say, it was kind of a quick and local job, and I had already was a designated driver to a reunion on Sunday. Anyhow, it got done, but he put in a universal, I think it was synthetic. I saw the bottle. I don't own the bottle.
Yep.
And it was an animal and a head of an animal, universal synthetic oil.
Right.
I should probably change it, or what should I do now that I'm running and it seems normal again? But
So the fluid he used is fine. Most of your transmission fluids now are fully synthetic, and most of them are, you can go backwards with them. You can put them in an older vehicle, backwards compatible. So what he used is going to be fine for your vehicle.
Oh, great.
If you, if you lost, how many quarts did it take to get it back up to?
Well, I'm not sure. Like, I actually put one in just to get it back from the parking lot to my house. And then the next day, I expect he drained it. I don't know, but it was not showing anything. When I pulled into that parking lot, it didn't show anything.
Right.
And I determined not to drive it anymore.
To answer your question, you're good with the fluid he used. If you want to play it safe or give the car a nice little boost, you could just do a drain and refill of the tranny. Don't do a total flush, but maybe do a standard transmission service. Unless he put a ton in it, maybe he put 5 or 6 quarts in it. But,
okay, but everything.
But you're safe. You're good to go.
Ted, we got to take a break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we'll get back to the phones. Two emails here. This one's from Susan. Susan writes, I have a 2009 F-250, great condition, 50,000 miles. Only problem is rust underneath. Anything I can do now with undercarriage showing rust?
Yeah, good, very good question.
Yeah.
And there are now a handful of products that can be applied to older vehicles on top of existing rust that will slow it down, stop it, lock it in. And most of them are petroleum base with additions of some paraffins, some waxes.
Oh, interesting.
And lanolin. Sheep's.
You're kidding
sheep's
me.
Sheep's lanolin.
Wow.
Yeah. And what that does is it thickens these solutions up, makes them cling and last longer, doesn't wash off as quickly. And there are systems where the wands go in the doors and in the trunk spaces where you can't get to the car, deck lids, things like that.
Yeah.
And they spray internally. And then the guy applying it or girl applying it, whoever, would then spray all the metal underneath the frame, the lines, all the... It's definitely a good idea.
Okay.
Yep.
This one's from Mike, who writes, could you please tell us your recommendations for storing a car for the winter? I've heard some people can get pretty extreme to the point of shrink wrapping the entire car in plastic. I fill up the gas tank, inflate the tire to 40 PSI, put a trickle charger on the battery, cover the car after it's been washed. Should I add a gas stabilizer? Is it better to change the oil before hibernation or wait until spring? Should I remove the battery from the car? By the way, the vehicles are both minis. One is an 87 Classic. The other is an 02 Cooper S. I can recount any of these questions. It was a long email.
He's doing the right thing.
Okay.
And two things I would definitely agree with that I don't know if he's done or not. Additive in the gas for sure.
Okay.
A lot of products that will keep the gas stable or fresh throughout the winter.
This is enzyme-based stuff?
Some of them are, and the enzyme-based ones are good for the ethanol gas, which is 99% of what everybody's using.
Yep.
And you need to put that in like the day you're storing the car, so it goes through the whole fuel system.
Yeah.
Trickle charger or a battery tender is an excellent idea because it keeps the battery topped up all the time.
What's the difference
between
a trickle charger and a tender?
Well, the tender has a control on it that watches the state of charge and stops charging when it's good.
Oh, and the trickle charger will not do that?
An old-fashioned trickle charger will just keep putting 2 amps or 1 amp to it forever. So get a battery tender. Tire pressure up is a good idea. Everything else that he mentioned, I think he's in good shape.
How about the shrink wrap?
Yeah. Well, if you really want to get intense, you can buy a capsule.
What?
They make a capsule.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, that you put your car in, and it has, I believe it's got it. I don't know if it has its own air source or what you do with the air in it, but you can also look at your classic all winter because it's a clear capsule.
Wow.
I think that's for maybe like Jay Leno and those guys.
Okay, you don't have one of those.
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. You could put that beautiful old VW bus in the front window of your place in one of those.
Yeah, if I ran out of space, that's what I'd probably do with it.
Yeah. That's a nice. Do you ever drive that thing?
I haven't driven that car in probably 10 years.
Yeah.
That vehicle. Yeah. It's an antique now. Now I'm scared to drive it.
Now, what do you do? Now, that's another thing. I mean, if that thing sits for 10 years at a time, how do you make sure that thing is ready to go?
It's full of fuel stabilizer and that's about it.
Yeah.
And it's in a good environment.
It's inside.
It's heated. It's inside and all that. But
could you take it? Is it registered? Could you drive it out on the road?
It is not registered, but it could get coaxed into service pretty quickly.
That's great.
Fresh battery, some cranking, maybe a change of gasoline, because even though it's been sitting for 10 years with stabilizer, it's probably getting bad.
That's a nice collectible.
It is.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Mike in Wappinger Falls. Mike, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2010 Kia Sedona, and the brake was going down all the way, so I took it to the mechanic. He changed the cylinder and suggested second time that we should change the brake calipers, which I did. But the problem is, it's still not the same as before the brake was sinking all the way to the ground. Should I be concerned, or is there something I could do with it?
Oftentimes, it's difficult to get all the air out of the system. And that could be what's happening. You may have some air trapped in a line somewhere from the master cylinder to the bleeders at the calipers. And I think maybe another thorough bleeding might be in order. The other thing we do see is stuck brake pads getting rusted in place will give you a artificially low brake pedal because it's not really pressing against the brake rotors. It's just bending or flexing the brake pad because it can't move anymore.
Yeah.
So, but if you have new calipers, I'm thinking your shop would have checked the condition of the pads and rotors and all that at that same time. But air in the system.
That's fine.
Yeah. Air in the system or rusted stuck pads are a very common problem.
But he bled it the first time when he did the cylinder and second time when he did the calipers.
Yep.
He should do it again?
Well, if the pedal can sometimes, after you restore the system and change all those parts, that brake pedal might be in a slightly different location than you're accustomed to, and it doesn't mean it's bad or dangerous. But you've got a new master and new calipers, your pedal height could be off a little bit and not be harmful.
What he was recommending is that perhaps it has to do with the ABS system. Could that be a possibility?
Not very likely, or your ABS would be self-activating or giving you other trouble. And I don't believe your Kia has any special bleed procedures, but it might. Cars with anti-lock brakes, a lot of them have a automated bleed that you have to perform with a scan tool. And that might be necessary in your car. And the shop would have to look into it and see if it's a a function that the car has.
All right, Mike, thank you very much for the call. Gordon Fricke, our guest. The number on Vox Pop is 800-348-2551. Andrew in Schenectady. Andrew, you're on.
Yeah, quick question for you. I have a Murano 2018, not even quite a year old, probably got 10,000, 11,000 miles. Recently, I started up in the morning, not every time, but I get this, like, grinding sound. And then I'll shut it off, turn it on. Most of the time, it leaves. A couple times, I turned it off, turn it on, and hear that same sound. But eventually, after I do it two or three times, it leaves. So I'm not quite sure if I should be concerned or what would be causing that kind of sound. And it only happens when I turn it on when it's been sitting there.
I'd be concerned.
Well, if it's that new of a vehicle, yes. And being an 18 vehicle, you're still full warranty.
Sure.
I'm not aware of any service bulletins on that subject for that vehicle, but is it a sound that is from the engine area when it's running, or is it an after sound of the starter? Can you tell?
When I first turn it on, it comes on at the same time I'm turning the car on.
While it's cranking? or the engine's already running?
No, at the same exact time as it's cranking.
And how long will that sound last? Will it last five minutes if you let it?
Well, I haven't gone to that point to let it last that long because I'm figuring if it's a problem, I shouldn't be doing it. So I just basically turn it off and usually turn it on, and then usually I don't hear it.
Yeah.
Once, like a couple times, like last week, I turned it on, turned it off, turned it on, came on again. You know, like, usually it's on and off, turn it on again, and it goes away.
Right. I think what I would do is this. Sometimes people will record sounds that their cars are making.
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. And some. Sometimes it really works well. Other times you don't have a clue what the sound is. But I think what I would do is get a good recording of it and maybe make contact with your dealer and say, hey, has anybody else been reporting this? You know, is this anything you've heard of?
Yeah.
And they might say, yeah,
sure.
we do have some of that bringing people bringing the cars in for this. Let's make an appointment. Or they'll say no, and you may have to demonstrate that sound to them.
Yeah.
Or leave it there overnight so they hear it.
Sure.
And, you know, if you get no satisfaction, Andrew, email voxpop@wamc.org before the next time Gordon's on. And we'll have Zach, the engineer, put it in the system, and we'll play it, and we'll see if we can figure it out.
That'd be a good idea.
Well, that sounds like a great idea. I've recorded it already. Now I just have to get it up to the dealer then.
Good.
All right. I appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551, the number. Gordon Fricke, our guest. Sam and Beckett. Sam, you're up.
Hi. I have a 2012 Mazda 5, and going from a stop, starting off, the wheels are prone to spinning a little bit before the car gets going. I was just wondering if that was a problem or if it's just the nature of the car.
Dry, normal roads, or is this wet road conditions?
Both. Like, it's more on wet roads and gravel roads, but even like on normal dry road conditions, it'll still tend to spin a little bit.
So is this a pretty aggressive takeoff? Are you stepping?
Do you have a lead foot?
Are you stepping down relatively hard to get rolling?
I'm trying my best not to.
Really?
And I tried to do a little bit of research online, and some people said maybe the tires were like hard, like the rubber was old. The tread seems fine, but other than that, I couldn't really find any answers.
Does this vehicle have traction control? I would assume it does. Stability, traction, all
that
stuff. Yeah.
And it has a button to turn it off.
Yes.
And I experimented with turning it off and leaving it on, and there doesn't seem to be a ton of difference. There's a light on the dash that'll come on at the beginning, when it's taking off.
Yeah, when you're slipping. And does that light up and it indicates to you the traction control is active when this occurs?
Yeah, it's like a second after the wheels spin, the light will come on, and then once everything's going, it'll turn off and everything's fine.
I mean, I don't, that sounds a little strange, because that's, you know, it's not like you've got a Ferrari that you can't harness, and it's trying to spin the...
Maybe the tires are old.
Yes, that's a good, a very good thought, that it could be a tire issue. Are the tires ancient?
I recently bought the car used. Like I said, the tread seems nice and deep, so they don't seem worn down, but they could have been an old set of tires or something that have been sitting for a while. I don't know.
And are they all the same? This is a Mazda 5, you said?
Yeah, online it's like a very small minivan. It said that it's built on the same platform as a Ford Focus. I'm not exactly sure what that means.
Yeah, so it's a front-wheel drive vehicle.
Correct, and yes, all the tires are the same.
Okay, easy experiment. Get the tires rotated. Make sure the pressures are all absolutely correct. See if anything changes.
Okay.
Just rule that out. You'll get two different tires on the front that were on the back of the car.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Sam. Gordon Fricke, our guest today, and now we head over to Saugerties, and Rob, you're on.
Hi, I got a GMC, 1995 GMC 4x4, and the tensioner for the serpentine belt went bad, and so I can't start the car, and we tried to move it with another vehicle towing it so I could get it out of my yard into my driveway to work on the fender, and the car is locked in position and won't budge, and I was wondering if the car is dead and it's in park and it won't start, will that, I can't get it out of park. Even though I can shift the shifter arm, it doesn't seem to come out of park. Is that something that happens if the car is not starting? It won't come out of park?
No, I mean, you should be able to turn the key to the on position, step on the brake pedal, and take it out of park. You still can't do that?
We couldn't get it to do that, no.
And what
I could try that. I don't know if I tried stepping on the brake.
Yeah, you have to be on the brake pedal to get any car out of park. And I think that's what's hampering you. And you may just be missing that step because the engine's not running, so you're just not, your mind is taking you beyond, you know, that the engine's not currently running. So, yeah, key on, brake pedal down, take it out of park.
Right.
You should be able to move the car, tow it around, push it around. And then, but you think the serpentine belt tensioner is seized on the front of the engine? Is that what you're...
Well, it just doesn't, it's broken. It just, like, flaps. It won't tension.
Yeah, okay.
So I got to replace it. But I had one more question. I got the tranny is a 1006L, I guess it is, and it was a brand-new model of transmission that came out. And they told me I needed a new tranny, and then several mechanics. And then I've had two other mechanics tell me, No, it's the pressure relief valve solenoids that go bad on those trannies. Do you know anything about that?
Well, they are, even though it's an older vehicle, it is a computer-controlled solenoid-activated transmission. So a transmission shop would be the one to confirm whether it's a fixable item or if it's in terrible shape. But if it's still running, driving, and moving... I would look into you get the belt situation straightened out and get it out of park and all that. Then I would make sure the fluid is full and clean.
Right.
And then talk to a transmission shop. See what they think about that solenoid issue.
Rob, thank you very much. We'll take a quick break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Yes, we'll, Zach the engineer, we'll take a break here and then we'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, and Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Oh, it's a popular show. Gordon Fricke is more popular than the Beatles or Elvis. This email came in from Robert. My question is about the oil change interval for my 2017 Ford C-Max Energy, which I bought used in April. The manual calls for 20,000 miles. I was thinking 10 would be more like it, since the engine operates maybe 60% of the time.
Correct. Good question, because
the energy's a hybrid.
Yeah. Okay. And that's a good question, because people will say the engine's off a lot of the time. So how do you figure the interval?
Yeah.
20,000 miles is too long. He's going to cut it to half, 10,000. Yeah. I agree with that on that particular car, because in reality, maybe that's only like 6,000 on a regular car.
Right.
With the engine off a lot of the time.
And you're often one to cut those
always
in half.
Because I'm constantly seeing the effects of inadequate oil changes when cars get older. 80, 90, 100, 120,000 miles plus. That's when you run into all the issues that all these inadequate or lack of oil changes caused, but it didn't show up till later. It's kind of like getting old, Ray.
Tell me about it. You know, one of those bits of folk wisdom with cars, and I never know if it's true or not. I've often heard when I was younger, the first couple oil changes are the most important.
You know, years ago, all the manufacturers had a first oil change very quickly after you purchased the car, like 1,000 miles.
Yeah.
And the idea then was to get all the sediment and break-in materials and all the new things that kind of came out of the engine and got into the oil and into the filter out of there for a great long life.
Right.
And that stopped decades ago.
Well, that just goes to show you.
But I still have some old school people that say, I want my oil changed right off the bat. I just bought this car. I want to do it at 1,000 or 2,000 miles. Very few people, but once in a while.
Well, once again, I'm well behind, decades behind the times. This one's from Jeff in Troy. I have a 1983 Fiat 124 Spider. I bought it 35 years ago, new. The car now has 101,000 miles on it. Needs some restoration. I know of a restoration shop in Ohio that specializes in these cars, but I'd like to find a shop closer. They are somewhat plentiful. These cars are somewhat plentiful, so there ought to be somebody out there, but Jeff has not found one yet.
Yeah. It's nice to take a specialty car to a specialty shop who does them if it's an intricate job or if there's a lot of weird stuff that these guys have figured out. So sometimes you are better off getting it to a place that might be far away. But
take a road trip to Ohio.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, not a bad idea.
Nothing wrong. This one is from Aaron. My Honda Odyssey kept leaking coolant over the summer. Every couple of days, I had to refill the radiator with straight water. It looked like the leak was coming from the radiator itself, but not positive. Problem has since diminished. That is, the fluid is low, but I only have to top it off once in a while. What do you suspect happened?
Well, if he didn't put any additives in there, any stop leaks, I don't know why it reduced other than it's getting a little cooler and maybe it's a stress situation that only leaks when it's when it's really warm and full pressure. But I would caution him to get that antifreeze tested for freezing strength. He put a lot of water in it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And his follow-up is, should I go ahead and just replace the radiator anyway?
I'd get it tested. I'd get it pressure tested at a shop. And that should bring out the leak.
All right, last email and then back to the phones. This one is from Mike in Clifton Park. I have a front-wheel drive sedan. I replaced the tires 2 or 3 years ago. Did not rotate them. Put around 30K since. I'm not looking to replace the front tires. The back tires still look fine. Can I purchase just 2 tires? And where should I put the new tires? You've been through this before.
A lot of times.
Yeah.
Front-wheel drive car, he specified, so it's not as critical to get the identical brand, model, everything exact.
Yeah.
I like to stick with the same tire on all 4 corners of the car. You can mix them. There's no law against it, but you want the grip, traction, and characteristics uniform on the car.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't take a BMW that has about a 50-50 weight distribution that you just paid $70,000 for and have the dealer say, hey, do you care if we mix up a bunch of tires on your car?
Okay.
You know, so I would at least get 2 matching tires to what's on there.
Right.
And you always used to put the best on the front.
Yeah.
But there is a school of thought where the better ones need to be on the rear because the back end's lighter and the front out tractions the rear.
Right.
I don't know where the jury is on that, because they're still saying rotate them, and in bad weather get the best traction.
Unless you have an old Corvair, right?
Yeah, then you'd want some good traction on the back.
That was a great design, huh?
It was a cool car.
Yeah, but it wasn't that safe, was it?
Only the first few years. Nader finished it off ahead of its time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That was a Ralph Nader thing.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones we go. Peter in Cobleskill. Peter, you're on.
Hi, I have a 2004 Toyota 4Runner, 210,000 miles. I just had one oxygen sensor changed, and the mileage slowly dropped with each tank full of gas from 19 down to 13.5. The spark plugs have at least 120,000 miles on them. But it seems like the oxygen sensor was the trigger for the mileage drop. What are your thoughts?
So you said you had one of the sensors replaced?
Yes.
And that improved the mileage?
No, the mileage dropped.
So
with the old sensor in there, we were getting 18.5 to 19 miles per gallon. And I've had a half a dozen tanks of gas since then, and each time the mileage has dropped more.
The oxygen sensor, the front one, yeah, the upstream, measures the mixture, tells the computer what the engine's doing, and makes adjustments. They get old and lazy, and they get somewhat coated with debris, and they slow down, and they can skew. They can go too rich. They can go too lean. I'll bet your old sensor was leaning towards the lean side and not enough to turn your light on, unless it did turn the light on, the check engine light, but it may have been artificially leaning your engine out. What I would do is I would definitely change the spark plugs at that mileage, and then I would run some additives through the gasoline, and they make some cleaners that are targeting the sensors and the catalytic converter, cleaners, and they will also do the injectors and the combustion chambers. I would do that. Spark plugs, cataclean, see how the car runs after that. Make sure your air filter is perfect also, and maybe your MPG will sneak back up.
Okay, thanks. The car actually runs better now. It ran fine before, but the engine is noticeably smoother now.
That would make sense then.
Yes. The old oxygen sensor was sneaking your vehicle to the lean side.
Which robs performance but gives you MPG.
Exactly. To a degree. So I think that's exactly what you experience.
Thanks.
Yeah. Good
Peter,
call.
Thanks for the call. Yeah. And over to Mike in Saratoga. Mike, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Can you hear me?
Sure. Yeah, you're on.
Yeah. I got an 89 Jag XJS V12. It's got 40,000 miles on it, and it's never been in the rain. I usually keep it in the garage, and I got it registered in March after being in the garage and not driving it for a couple of years, but I started every day. And when I started to drive it, I went to put the brakes on, and it pulled severely to the left. And you know, it was like almost dangerous.
Right.
So I asked a mechanic, and he says, that's because your right caliper is locking up. It's not grabbing. It's already locked up. And he says, but usually if you drive it around a little, it'll unfreeze. And it did. It got better after a couple days.
Yep.
And when I went to stop it, everything was fine. So then, it started up again, started pulling to the left again, because he said to me, feel the wheel on the left front, as, you know, he says, you see how it is? It's not really hot. And the one on the right side was really hot,
yep.
The one that was locked up. Well, anyway, he says, get new calipers, he said, and we'll put them on. So I ordered new calipers, got them, and he claims that these calipers that go on a Jag are exact same that go on a Toyota truck or something. And he said he's put thousands. So he went and put them on, and And it's that now I drive down the road. When I left the shop, it was worse than it was when I brought it up. Now it's uncontrollable.
Oh, wow.
It stops. You know, it stops, but it's really, and you know, I watched him do it. It seemed like he was putting them on and everything. And there's like shims or spacers that go in those calipers. I don't know if you know about that. The spacers, they look like washers
between the and, the pads and the pistons of the caliper. You're talking about?
I wasn't sure that that's where they go, but yeah. When he was putting the caliper on. And anyway, and then he bled the brakes. Well, he didn't know that it wasn't going to work because
right.
I was still in the shop. When I left the shop, I was going. I went like two miles down the road to my house, and it put the brake on, and it was like, oh, it was hard to control.
All
and,
right. So here's what we run into a lot on older cars, especially when they've sat around a long time, brake hose issues. The hoses that carry the fluid from the metal pipes out to the calipers can look great, but they can develop a terrible internal flaw, and they will block the fluid from flowing. So it puts the brakes to one wheel, not the other, and when it finally reaches, gets through that obstruction in the hose, it then keeps the brake applied way too long afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
So you got a hot wheel and a brake pull.
That
so
makes sense.
If I had to guess on your car, I'd be very suspicious of the brake hoses. And you can't test them. You just have to replace them.
Mm.
And at that age, they deserve to be replaced. And if it fixes your problem, you're going to do the Irish jig.
Well, Mike, thanks for the call. I love those. That era XJS with the V12.
That's a big, long engine. Oh. It's very smooth and quiet.
Had an opportunity to drive one once on the sawmill downstate. They go pretty good.
Did you open it up?
I did a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, let's just leave it at that.
Double the speed limit.
Yeah. Jerry in Chatham, you're on. Jerry.
Hi. Thanks. Okay. I have a 2015 Jeep Grand Cherokee that has a noise, rattle-like noise in the dash in the driver's side. Now, they have tightened the kick plate. I took it back again, and they retightened it. That didn't help. They pulled out the entire dash and retorqued everything. The last time I took it back, they tightened some kind of bolts relating to the hood, and nothing has worked. It's still doing it again. Luckily, I have a Goodwill guarantee from the dealer I bought it from because it's now off of warranty.
Right.
The last thing that I heard was that it could be caused by air vibration because it only does it at highway speeds, 60-ish and above. I took it out today in the rain. They said that it might the rain might actually subdue it, and it did. But I'm not totally convinced of that yet. But I know this is a long shot, but what's your thinking here? What's the next place to look for this?
Do you think the noise is inside the vehicle with you?
I do.
Okay, because we run into a lot of cars with shielding underneath the car, exhaust shields, sound deadening. And I had a vehicle the other day I was driving. It was a Chevy Equinox. And only when I got above, I think, 35 or 40, I heard this strange sound like a piece of metal flapping around in the wind, like an old West movie where the pots and pans were.
Yeah.
And I slowed down, it stopped. I sped up, it did it. I went through corners, it changed. I raised the car up, and there was a rivet that had corroded through that was holding a metal shield under the car. Re-riveted it, sound gone. So sometimes the sound is not inside the car with you. It's underneath the car or under the hood, making its way in. So I'd be suspicious of something under the car, like a shield or a sound deadening material or something like that.
Even on a 2015, which is pretty new?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean that a rivet corroded out, but there could be something that's tweaked or out of whack.
Well, Now, this started at 30,000 miles, and I now have 50,000 miles on the car.
Okay. Yeah, isn't it crazy? You'd think it would just stop doing it. Something would change. And
it would fall
over.
Off completely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, those are very frustrating for the owner of the car and the mechanic, because believe me, the mechanic wants to solve the problem. The dealership doesn't want it coming back 10 times.
Yeah.
It's awful. I've been through it.
Let's go to Frank in Cleveland, Ohio. Frank, are you actually in Cleveland, Ohio right now?
Actually, I'm on my way to Hyannis, Massachusetts, on the road.
Ah, okay. Well, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for taking the call. So I own a 1953 Ford Country Sedan station wagon. It's been in the family since 1956.
Wow.
And I spent the last year and a half rebuilding the car from the tires up. And that includes replacing the fuel pump with an OEM fuel pump and rebuilding the carburetor to spec. My challenge is this. At the beginning of the summer, when I finished the rebuild, operating absolutely perfectly, but now I'm having issues at the top end of the RPM. In other words, I've got plenty of power down on the lower gears, but as I get to the top end of the any of the gears, I start losing power.
So when you're losing the power, is it starting to break up and run badly?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's kind of like misfiring or blah, 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 blah. You know, kind of the engine's kind of starting to fall apart at the higher RPMs.
Exactly.
Yeah. Be very suspicious of ignition at that point. And a weak ignition coil will do that. And the power supply to the ignition coil will do that. And that's going to require some testing with a voltmeter. And on a car that age, is that car still six? Is that a 6-volt car?
Generator?
It is. Flathead V8.
Yeah. Yeah.
6-volt.
Yeah. So sometimes you're only at like.
So the coil has been replaced.
Yep.
And the timing's dead nuts.
Yes. Be very cautious of the voltage supply to that ignition coil. I've had this happen personally, and I also just talked to somebody the other day. With a tractor that losing power, breaking down, running badly, and the volts to the coil were too low, starving the ignition system, and the car breaks down at high RPM.
Well, Frank, that's it for the show today. Thank you for being the last one. Sorry to everybody left on the line. Gordon Fricke's a very popular man. He's sold more records than Slim Whitman, than the Beatles, than Elvis, but he'll be back, so hang on to those calls. Support comes from Klinkhart Hall Art Center, presenting the Sharon Springs Poetry Festival October 17th through 20th, featuring Ellen Bass and Michael Dickman. More at klinkhart.org/poetry. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, providing the greater capital region with custom display cases, trade show exhibit fabrication, interactive kiosks for nationwide conferences, special events at museum exhibitions, empireexhibits.com. At Merritt Bookstore, Millbrook, open 7 days a week and this weekend at the Sheep and Wool Festival with craft book author signings, Pom Pom Magazine, and children's book authors, merrittbookstore.com. Well, thanks again to Gordon Fricke for stopping by today. Thank you for stopping by. Thanks for the great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Jim Lavoulis, our producer. Ed Rosen took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, representatives from the Franklin County Cider Days and Bear Swamp Orchard and Cidery will join us for a Food Friday. Right now, it's the Capital Connection.